You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Don't lose patience and don't lose faith. Two similar messages from two Seattle mayors. But what distinguishes Jenny Durkin from Bruce Harrell, personally and politically? Producer Brandy Fullwood spoke with KUOW's reporter David Hyde about the transition from Durkin to Harrell.
Is there a clear bridge from Durkin to Harrell?
I mean, Durkin decided not to run. Had she run, I'm not sure she would have lost. I would say, though, this city is obviously pretty polarized. And if you look at who you might have to appeal to as mayor, if you're going to appeal to everybody, are you going to have to appeal to folks that voted for Republican Ann Davison for city attorney and folks who voted for abolitionist Nicole Thomas Kennedy for city attorney? Like, how does, Harrell, how could he possibly appeal to both of those constituencies and sort of unite the city, if that's what uniting the city means? I'm David Hyde, and I'm a politics reporter here at KUOW.
Honestly believe we are fighting for the same people in the city. Working people, underrepresented people, people who want a living wage. People who just simply want better opportunities. People who want to be free from violence. People who want to save our planet. That's a one Seattle.
His personal background is different. His style is different. In terms of appointments, certainly you're seeing some people he's working with that who we've seen before, longtime city council member Tim Burgess, right, who has served with Harrell on council for many, many years and is kind of a policy wonk. But also somebody like Marco Lowe, who was actually in the McGinn administration, which was very much an activist administration, is Harrell's new chief operating officer. So, you know, whether or not we're going to see big changes kind of ideologically from the Durkin administration, I don't really know. Are we going to see new initiatives? I think probably yes, because times change.
He does not know what it looks like to work for a mayor like me.
He is this kind of person who believes in the power of personality and kind of how likable he is. And because of his style of governance, because of who he is, he can be more effective at things like police reform, solving homelessness, making progress on those things than his predecessors. This stuff about unity and bringing people together, I mean, that's who the guy is, and he really kind of believes that. So I think he hasn't had a mayor like me. I think that's, he genuinely believes that that's going to move things in a different direction.
Seattle will be thriving. No more talk of this dying narrative. We will be a city renewed with optimism, a city that treats all people with dignity and appreciates the richness and diversity of our voices, the perspectives of all communities.
There's also this issue that you heard in the speech about Harrell being kind of branded a moderate, at least a moderate for Seattle, or even a conservative for Seattle. He's very resistant to that idea and says, I've got progressive values and I've a track record of progressive values, and you're going to see those progressive values from me as mayor. And parenthetically, he's being compared in the national press a lot to other Black moderate politicians, including New York's new mayor, Eric Adams, right, who also ran on this platform of funding rather than defunding the police, which is what a lot of activists wanted to hear. There's some real disagreements here over policing, over homelessness, and it's going to be impossible to make everybody happy. If that's what he's trying to do, he's not going to be able to do it. And actually, I will say, one thing that I sense about Bruce Harrell is that he would like to make different types of folks happy as mayor, and that's going to be a hard thing to do. So I think that the expectation is one of trying to bring people together, and then the question is whether or not he can do it.
So for those who are still cynical or oppositional, I welcome the opportunity to have a dialogue with you, and I simply ask that very simple request. Give us a chance. Give us a chance. So if there's one thing I believe in without pause, if there's one thing I want to leave is my legacy as the mayor of Seattle, is that we are one Seattle.
That's Mayor Bruce Harrell. And you also heard from KUOW politics reporter David Hyde talking with Soundside producer Brandy Fullwood. And Mayor Harrell will be on with us in just a minute. He'll be taking your questions. To get in the queue, give us a call, 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. And we'll be right back. I'm Libby Denkman. This is Soundside. Back with Soundside on KUOW, I'm Libby Denkman. We didn't get to hear him sing the national anthem a cappella at his swearing-in ceremony, perhaps another day. But Bruce Harrell became mayor on New Year's Day, and he is into his second week leading the city. Mayor Harrell joins us now to take your questions. Again, it's 206-543-5869 to talk to the mayor, 206-543-KUOW. Mayor Harrell, thank you very much for being on Soundside.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to it, and we have 6 days in our belt, so that's one more day than I had in my first term, so I'm pretty excited to pass my old tenure.
Well, on the subject of unity, you heard David Hyde talk about One Seattle, your message in your swearing-in speech. Are you trying to make too many people happy?
Well, you know, I heard the dialogue before. Yeah. I don't want to get too philosophical when we're talking about homelessness and public safety and business revitalization, but my theory on happiness, I think, is a little different. I can't make anyone happy. That is not, happiness is an internal emotion that people have to find for themselves. And I just believe that in my life. So no, I'm not trying to make everyone happy. That is an impossible task. What I'm trying to do is make rational, data-based decisions on my value system. I can control my happiness, and I could influence those who work around me. And so we make decisions based on kindness and compassion and empathy and data. That's what we're trying to do. But I would be a fool to think that I can make 700,000 plus people happy, but I can create an environment by which they feel safer and more educated, or at least more optimistic in terms of their pathway. So, you know, to be criticized for, here's a mayor coming out trying to make everyone happiness. Did I ever say that? Were those my words? And so I tell this city that I love so much, I appreciate it, but I didn't sign up to make everyone happy, because I know that's a failing strategy.
However, you say it, you know, the label moderate is something that you have bristled at. Can you point to a major break that you are making with the prior administration that will show some of the skeptics that you actually do plan to shake things up and do things differently?
Yeah. You know, I'm at a point to where people want me to really significantly criticize the Durkin administration or the Murray administration or past administrations. And, you know, you hear me talk about what I draw energy from. And I just don't draw energy from being that critical. I can't control what they did in the past. I will tell you that I think we've already made history in everything that we've done. We're going to make some announcements this afternoon. As example, I asked my director of communications person whether I could say that, because we haven't released it yet. But I'm making personnel decisions that would demonstrate that I have an ability to attract talent. And that's a skill set that not everyone has, because they believe in both my integrity and my message and my ability to work hard. So we're going to announce that our housing director is going to be Michael Winkler Chin. You heard it first here live. She's headed up the PDA for Chinatown International District for she's been there for almost 17 years. She doesn't change jobs a lot. Incredibly gifted in terms of knowing housing policy and passionate about making Seattle more affordable. We're going to announce that Hamdi Mohammed, who was just elected as the Port of Seattle, a commissioner, upcoming star, will be head of our Office in Immigrant Refugee Affairs. And so we're going to look at how we improve not only conditions of life for that particular community, but how we could bridge establish bridges and linkages between those communities and everyone else. And so we're making history as we speak. So whether that is better or worse or the same as the Durkin administration or anyone else, who cares, right? Who cares? We can't change that. I'm just going to do the things that I think make sense to be an effective mayor. And, you know, I'll let other people compare and contrast.
Well, we love making news on Soundside, our second day on the air here on KOW. So thanks for that. Yeah. A personnel announcement from Mayor Bruce Harrell. You're listening to Soundside. Moving on to the issue of policing. Police accountability, of course, took on this new urgency with the release of a report confirming that multiple officers engaged in this hoax in June 2020 to fool protesters into thinking armed members of the Proud Boys were marching towards Capitol Hill and the protest zone that was forming there. And that was soon after the police had evacuated the East Precinct. This affirmed reports by journalist Omari Salisbury and musician Matt Speck Watson and others. We learned about this just in the last 10 days or so. Of course, the report was finished in September. You've said that the hoax was not acceptable. What about the scope and outcome of this investigation? What do you make of it? Are you confident that everyone responsible, including higher-ups in the department, were identified in this report?
So, a few things. Number one, tomorrow I'm holding a press conference, and this will be one of the issues I'm going to tackle head on. So I don't want to, unlike me spilling the beans on some personnel adjustments that have not been made public, I don't want to give you too much of a preview for what I'm going to say tomorrow, but let me just hum a few bars. There will no doubt be a subsequent sort of louder mill hearing possibility. So a mayor, it's inappropriate for a mayor to talk about whether the ruse should or should not have been allowed. What we will establish in our administration is what some of the young activists would call truth to power. So I'm going to come out being critical of at least my opinion on who knew, who should have known this. I didn't know sort of stance that we've heard in recent months or years. That's just not going to occur under my administration. So tomorrow, if you'll let me punt until tomorrow afternoon, I'm planning on having Omari Salisbury there. I spoke with him this morning. I'm planning on having the chief of police there. I spoke with him yesterday. And we're going to be very direct. So that's where we will be tomorrow. Be there, please, and I'll go from there.
Yeah. I understand that you want to save this for when community members, stakeholders are gathered. I just wanted to pass along this question from one of our Twitter users, our friends, who wanted to ask you, when you speak to the mayor, can you please inquire, is Interim Chief Diaz free of any conflict of interest as he reviews the ruse, quote unquote, relating to the Proud Boys in the summer of 2020? And this user who contacted us said they would like to hear the mayor say that the current review is fair. Anything else you can add in terms of accountability and the follow-up before tomorrow?
Yeah. I think, first of all, thank the viewer for viewing and listening, because that means they care about these issues. So first of all, full disclosure, I have not read the 19-page report that I've told has been published. I haven't even seen it yet. I will read that to know exactly what is in there. I did speak to Andrew Meyerberg over the weekend just to get an idea of what his schedule is going to be with the hearing coming up. I spoke with Lisa Herbold, this council member Herbold, this morning. So does he have a conflict of interest? No. So Chief Diaz, in order to make any comments, he cannot. He's under the same legal obligation that I am. There cannot be an appearance that we are somehow thwarting the rights of those affected in these two situations, the retired officers. Even though they are retired, they still can be disciplined. And so I cannot look like we have a predetermined position or disposition on the matter. So I have to comply with the law. Mm. And I am an attorney, so I try to do that. So that's the first issue. I, however, can talk about ruses, when they should be used, when they should not be used, and I can talk about factually sort of my opinion on what happened with Chop Chaz. And so I will do that, but but no, Chief Diaz is not conflicted from giving a factual opinion. And I've talked to him about that. So we will have that discussion tomorrow. And I think I'll address it to the satisfaction of all listeners.
Are you going to address the four-month gap, nearly 4 months, between when the report was completed in September and when it was released to the public? It seems like an awfully long time for such an important, explosive report.
Well, I don't know what caused the gap. You know, I know my deputy mayor, Monisha Harrell, was listening and participating in a hearing in front of Councilmember Herbold. I have not had a debrief discussion with her on what conversations occurred because of the gap. And so I just have to be brutally honest and say I'm not going to express an opinion on something I don't know about factually.
Got it.
Period.
Got it. Mayor Bruce Harrell joins me now on Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. You can give us a call to participate and ask the mayor your questions. 206-543-KUOW is how to get in touch. We've also had a number of questions coming in through our texting group, which you can join at kuow.org/soundside. Mayor Harrell, the Seattle City Council last year restricted the use of tear gas, blast balls, pepper spray, other quote-unquote less lethal weapons. And Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan refused to sign a bill predicting that there would be judicial intervention. Interim Chief Diaz has called the bill naive, saying that it could lead to more extreme use of force as a last resort. The rules allowing police to use pepper spray and tear gas on crowds in response to violent public disturbance, it's defined as violence committed by a group of 12 or more people. Those are the current rules. What are your positions on the use of this type of less lethal weapon on crowds of protesters? And when you hire a police chief, will you look for someone who refuses to authorize the use of tear gas against protesters?
Yeah, that's a fair question. So let me tell you my values first. And it's difficult for me to tell you specifically where our policies will be because I'm demanding from both the police department and other leaders some research being done on a few things. Here's my values. I've protested since I was 10, 11, 12 years old with my parents. Peaceful protesting. I protested during the George Floyd murder. And I don't think that in peaceful protest, the police department, that they need to understand that as part of our country, part of our democracy. And so they should be less inclined ever to use tools or weapons or suppression instruments that would cause harm to people and could infuriate an already existing touchy situation. So everything we do has to be with that lens. Now, we have to be realistic and understand that we have anarchists often, and we have people committing acts of violence and putting others in unsafe conditions, period. And if that is the case, then I have to be able to give our officers the tools to be able to handle that situation. Now, whether those tools are some of those that you mentioned or not, I need to look at exactly, and I need to better understand how or when these tools are ever used. I certainly lean toward the side of allowing people to peacefully protest, but my first and my paramount responsibility is to protect and serve, protect the welfare of everybody. So that is a long-winded way of saying that on my sixth day in office, where I am looking at when tools can be used, I'm looking at experts. And I have to believe that experts understand my plea for humanity and peaceful protest as well. And so there will be a balance here. So give me more than 6 days for us to articulate a very clear policy. And I will tell you this, that whatever the policy is, it will be implemented and fully. In other words, we cannot have that miscommunication between the mayor and the chief and the rank and file. That is my job to define that policy, and I'm not going to define it on my sixth day in office because there's a lot of data to understand and review. So that's where we are in different types of tools that will be used.
We have calls on the line, folks calling in at 206-543-KUOW to talk to Mayor Harrell. And Lefkos from Seattle is wanting to ask about homelessness policy. Go ahead, Lefkos.
There are hundreds and hundreds of people living in on our sidewalks and on our parks. And these people generate all kinds of filth because that's where they have to live. They poop on the sidewalks, behind people's yards, anywhere they can. There are no dumpsters. There are no toilets. Since you cannot provide them with decent housing, why don't you at least provide them with portable showers, portable toilets, and dumpsters so they do not live in all this filth?
Lefkos, thank you very much for calling in. Mayor Harrell, your response.
My response is I appreciate the compassion that the caller articulated and making sure that the homeless population's needs are met as well. I do not see as a short-term solution. Well, let me back up. The sanitation needs and the hygiene needs, the health needs of those homeless, you will see our investment strategy reflect that. So I just finished a one-hour call with King County Executive Dow Constantine. I just finished a call with Congressman Adam Smith, and we are talking about getting resources to help those who have the health or hygiene issues as well. So we are looking at where we take people, where we house them, where their needs can be met. The caller makes a great point that while we house people, there's some low-hanging fruit, and it could be something as being able to pick up litter or be able to provide mobile hygiene services. There's some things we can do, and quite frankly, we are going to do those things. So we're trying to get some quick wins here just to meet some emergent needs of people who are out there, particularly now that it's so cold, and we'll be as creative as possible. Quite frankly, I have a sense of urgency, and even though we've been in office for 6 days, I'm having discussions now what mobile services look like, what hygiene services look like, where we can take people to make sure their needs are met. At the end of the day, I have to also clean this city up. It's dirty. There's debris and litter on the grounds. There's graffiti everywhere. And so working with my utility departments as well, we have a lot of energy behind this.
Mayor Bruce Harrell is taking your calls, and we're going to move to Susan from Crown Hill. Thanks, Susan, for calling into Soundside. What did you want to ask?
Hi. I'd like to ask the mayor whether he would extend the ban on residential evictions. It expires on Saturday. The pandemic is heating up again, and the weather's terrible. And his predecessor extended that ban many, many times. Mayor Harrell, will you extend the ban on rental eviction?
Thanks, Susan.
Thanks, Susan, for the question. So tomorrow I will announce that, and I don't want to be coy on this show. We maybe should have done this tomorrow because we have a lot of announcements making this week. So I'm not going to answer that question directly, yes or no, but I will give you an indication on what we're trying to do. Number one, nothing in our policies will enhance or suggest that we want anyone to be on the street because they cannot pay their rent because of COVID or other conditions of poverty. So nothing we do will go against that value. You should also know that even if I ended the moratorium because of the council ordinance, it's still in place for 6 months. So regardless as to what action I take before Saturday, it's in place for 6 months. I'm concerned about a larger issue than all of that. What I am concerned about, number one, is what is working to help tenants and what is not. The city, I don't think, has done an adequate job of even knowing whether it was effective, whether even landlords, for example, who often still have mortgages and taxes and insurance, whether they are being forced to lose that home because of their inability to receive financial assistance. There goes perhaps another affordable housing that could get rehabilitated and priced up such that we lose affordable housing. So what you will see, regardless as to what my decision is tomorrow, you will see me requiring some work, some hard work that the city must do to determine the effectiveness of the moratorium, to make sure that both tenants and landlords can receive financial assistance,
we have resources here. Are we getting the resources out in a timely way? So I'm more interested in looking at what we've learned. It's been renewed, I think, seven times the moratorium has been renewed, but the city has not gone back and look at who is it helping, who is it not helping, and where are their gaps. And so this is not just yes or no stuff, okay? And so under our approach, we'll make a firm decision tomorrow. We will announce it, but we certainly will do nothing to further jeopardize the homelessness of those who are very fragile.
Great question from Susan. Thank you for calling in. Mayor Harrell taking questions, and we are moving to Gary from Queen Anne. And this is an accessibility issue that I think a lot of folks face in the city. Gary, what's your question?
Oh, my wife came down with cancer a few years back, and she was in a wheelchair for about a month, and now she uses a walker for exercise out. But we find that curb cuts around parks, sometimes there's only on two corners versus four. Nursing homes sometimes have them, some of that time they don't. We live on our own and everything, so we're fine. We can drive, but still, and bus stops. So it seems like they're placed randomly and not methodically. And it seems like access to these areas, the curb cuts should be spread out. So I hope you can kind of work on that.
Yeah. Mayor, to you, accessibility and the curb cuts. A lot of folks did write in as well in our texting group about sidewalk access, specifically some greenwood, some gaps where pedestrian safety is a real concern.
Yeah. Thank you, Gary. And my hope and prayers for the healing in your family. And thank you for calling. So an interesting thing occurred during the summer when I was running for office, and that is a volunteer who was blind caught many buses to my North End campaign office around 100th and Aurora. And I walked with her to the bus stop, and we had a fruitful discussion for hours as a volunteer in my campaign. And she had a little cut on her forehead because there was something that was in her walkway that she had bumped her head. And so I share that experience to say that that how we will get better, how I will be a better mayor for you, is for me to always look at the lens of a person that is in a wheelchair or blind or deaf. That's what we're going to do, working with our Disability Commission and with volunteers in the Disability Commission. So, yes, my new transportation director will do an inventory of what can appear as random curb cuts, where they are, where they are not. You know, I talk a lot about safety in a city, and so that is going to be one of the paramount requirements or criteria by which I'll measure my new SDOT director. I hear you loudly, Gary. Send us emails on areas. You know, we used to have that Find It, Fix It app, and the city really did a decent job of trying to reach out to communities. That's how we're going to get better. If I could also say this, that when I got elected in 2007, 2008, I was in charge of City Light from a policy standpoint, and I was driving around and said, man, there seems to be a lot of streetlights out. And why was that? So we called some committee hearings and found out, well, they're out because people haven't complained that they're out. And I thought they were out around my area, which is in 98118, under the poorer area of the town. And I said, well, this doesn't seem fair. We found out we had a system that needed to be changed. It was a complaint-based system. So I not only switched to how we change it, we changed it to a quadrant strategy. We just did it, you know, we know we could time where streetlights went out, and then we switched over to LED lights as well, which is more environmental friendly. So
it doesn't get any more basic in city government than potholes and streetlights, right? Those are the building blocks of engaging, I think, and being responsive. Mayor Bruce Harrell on with Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Turning quickly to the issue of schools, because we could see a return to temporary remote instruction at Seattle Public Schools, maybe some or all. Right now, it feels like we're teetering on the brink. I wanted to hear directly from Anna in Columbia City. She's a Kimball Elementary School parent, and they found out yesterday at 6 o'clock that there would be no instruction, no remote instruction either at Kimball Elementary School again today.
Hi, my name is Anna and I live in Columbia City. I have four children, three of whom attend Kimball. One is in fourth grade and my twins are in kindergarten. Because of the closure, I had to stay home with my kids as we don't have childcare. I'm also a SPS substitute, and having to cancel my job assignment for this week was very hard for me. Schools are in dire need of subs. The sub shortage is real. Obviously, this is why Kimball closed. the district needs to do something to decrease the shortage. Not only that disclosure affected the Campbell community, but it affected other communities as well. It's a ripple effect, and we all have been hurt by this.
Anna in Columbia City there, leaving us a voicemail. And Mayor Harrell, I know you don't have a ton of formal powers over the school district, but this is an issue that can grind a city to a halt. What can you do to help parents in this position as the new mayor? Are you, and additionally, are you happy with the communication from the district so far?
So a few things with Anna's plight. So there are a few things I can do and will do. First of all, the superintendent of public schools, Dr. Brent Jones, is a dear friend of 40 years, and he and I talk regularly and in depth about policy, working with his board, his school board. And so when people are in Anna's plight where they have to stay home, I have to try to find out what resources are available for someone like Anna, who just can't afford to miss work or can't afford to pay the expensive costs of daycare. So I have to know what they're going to do. Interestingly enough, Dr. Jones told me last week when I asked him about, you know, we are erring on the side of health and the safety of our children because of the Omicron variant, that he said that the data would suggest that the school is one of the safer places often, because when, not particularly for the kiddos, the younger ones, but the high school kids, that they, when they're not in school, they have a tendency to socialize and you know, could be more transmittable because of their social activities. So the bottom line is, you know, I have to trust that the school board and the superintendent are going to make prudent decisions following the data. But then if there are resources available for people in honest plight, I have to make sure that we have resources, number one, and we communicate it to people like her to be able to survive, because we know the financial hit on having to miss work.
We got a question from our texting group, and we're winding down. We have about a minute and a half, 90 seconds left here, Mayor. The question was about Healthy Seattle and what does it mean to provide health care for all in the city and promoting healthy living. It was something you talked about in your swearing-in address. What can you tell our listener here that wanted to know about Healthy Seattle?
Yeah, it's modeled after something that started around 2007 in San Francisco called Healthy Seattle, and it's just not the healthcare component, but we really want to measure the health of our residents here. Housing security is a component of that, so healthcare is a component of that. Many people working two jobs, they just don't have it, so we're going to work very closely with members of the community clinic situation, major hospitals, philanthropic communities. We've already started our meetings now to talk about how we fund it, how we structure it. And by the end of my administration, we should be able to have a city that measures its health outcomes, including health care, and everyone will have health care in this city. So I have a former council member and mayor Tim Burgess drafting the plan with some outside expertise. And you'll see something here in writing in the near future.
Thank you so much, Mayor Bruce Harrell, for joining us and really taking a lot of varied questions from our listeners. It's great to be able to keep this dialogue open. We often were able to welcome on KUOW your predecessor, and I hope we can continue to have these conversations going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. You're very welcome. My pleasure. I hope to be accessible to everyone.
I'm Libby Denkman. You are listening to Soundside as we wrap up here on a Tuesday. Soundside will be back tomorrow with a brand new episode.